Type radio, type radio, type radio.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the 22nd Forum des Typographie in Düsseldorf, the Fachhochschule, and with us is Albert-Jan Pohl. Welcome.
Okay.
The first question, are you religious?
No.
You were not raised religious?
Yes, I was raised somehow religious, Calvinist, Protestant. Mm-hmm.
And does that have an effect on your work?
No.
No.
No, maybe it has the influences it has is that Calvinists are people that not that are usually not that outrageous. When you see what, when you compare, in Holland you have the Catholics and the Protestants. The Protestants are more serious and they don't, what's carnival in English?
Carnival.
It's carnival?
Yeah.
Okay, so you see that the Protestants don't celebrate things like that. They are down to earth. And that's maybe a thing you can also see. That's what I appreciate about people like Futiger or the like, that they do serious work. They do not try to be hip or this and that. And so it has my cultural background has something to do with type design, but you cannot translate it in forms.
Do you have rituals?
Rituals. I probably have, yeah, but not that that it's no. I'd rather say I don't have any. No.
Do you have a hero?
A hero? Ooh. No, not a hero. No.
Also, not a professional hero.
Professional hero. Maybe Adrian Frutiger was a. Was my professional hero for a long time.
And then what happened?
I see that Adrian Frutiger has made some very good typefaces, but you see that I realized that he is good at he became famous with things like Frutiger and Universe. But when you see his classical typefaces like Apollo or what's the other one?
Me too. I know which one you mean, but
yeah. Yeah, it's Apollo is echt genoeg. You see that that it's more difficult for him to make a perfect typeface within other systems. So you can see that his background has something to do with his constructivism, with grids, and when his typefaces go in that direction, he's very good. And as long as his sans serif, he is also very good. But when he does other things, he is not the winner in the competition.
There are betters.
Yeah, there are others which make typefaces on similar guidelines and come out with better results.
How much hours do you work a week?
Between 40 and 50.
But you have an office where you go to?
Yeah.
You don't work from your house?
No. No home office.
That's in the States, no?
That's a home office.
Yeah. And how was your interest sparked in typography?
So what sparked?
How was it initiated?
I only know about the sparks, and I always wondered where the name comes from. So now you tell me.
How was it? It sparked is like ignited or initiated.
Initiated.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But 1 year before I started my study at the academy in The Hague. That's 1.5 years. I was in a in a committee which fought for the rights of people that go to college, for students, the students' rights at college, not students at the university, but in college. We had our own newspaper, which we did every month or 2 months, and then our the guy who did the layout was very keen on finding the latest typefaces, and he told me about Piet Schreuders. Piet Schreuders issued his cat newspaper, the Pussenkrant. And you could read about this, and Piet Schreuders told this story that he collected letters from single characters from the issues of the newspaper, put them in boxes, and assembled them again to make the headlines. Merely because the typeface was not really available in Europe, when you look at it afterwards, because it was Metro, and if it was not exactly Metro, Metro would have done. But this is the kind he worked with it. And I have been collecting Gaudi catalog from the newspaper for this, just to see what the typeface looked like. And because of my fascination with Piet Schreuders was a bit before the academy, and then it was merely a practical thing. I had to I wanted to make a lettering for the room we had for the students, for ourselves, mm-hmm. and had figured how to do this. So I looked at the Jimi Hendrix covers with these bloop kind of typography, and try to work along that. And after that was a six-letter word, and then I thought, by the way, when you get these, you can also try the alphabet. Hmm. And then I tried some other things, and then I showed these things to start at the academy, and then it took me 1.5 years before I understood what Gerard Noordzij intended to do. So the ignition is before the academy, but the way things worked out were completely different.
And then from Holland you moved to...
Yeah, I didn't. I never finished my studies. I tried to do my exams 2 times, and I didn't even apply for them, so I just didn't do it.
Why weren't you interested in finishing then?
Yeah, I was not. I was mentally not in the state of doing things like that.
How old were you?
25, 26. So academy was not easy for me, but and then I was. Yeah, sort of unemployed and giving calligraphy courses at the Wijk en Dienstencentrum heb je in Nederland, hè? Dat is in het dat zoiets als de Volkshogeschool.
Ja.
Ik weet niet wat in het Engels is.
It's a neighborhood center or
something. Ja, en.
What is it, like hobby classes?
Ja, yeah, it's hobby classes.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
How did that?
Old ladies and.
Really?
Yeah.
And how was that then?
It was giving these courses was of course very very good for me, because I went back to the roots of type design and had to explain this. Until then I've only been doing what Gerard Noordzij told us what was right. Of course, you have some variations, but before you realize what's going on, you're finished with that and do the next thing. Mm-hmm. So it is always good to have some kind of reflection and say, so what have I learned, and what do I tell? And then your own vision starts to to grow, because simply you do it from your own and not just copying something what somebody else tells you. It's the other way around. We were not copying slavishly what Gerard told us, but
yeah.
it's by concept it's the opposite. Doing things yourself and telling other people how to do, why to do, and but the same rules apply. Gerard always told us that my best teachers are my students, because I learn from their questions. That's the same thing I did. Mm. I learned from the questions that whether they are seniors or old ladies or deranged people, the answering the questions is the same thing compared to us answering questions from students.
Right.
It's the questions that bring the answers and form theory.
Because they didn't know anything about the theory of typography and type design. And
but people like to write.
Mm.
They like to express themselves.
No, but I mean, like, the type of questions are different from...
They are not different. No.
Oh, really?
No, the problems are the same. How do I make this A? Why do I make this A like this? Why cannot I make it like that? And when I make it like that...
And your explanation is also different then? Or is it also the same?
It's more or less the same. It's not really... you don't have to invent the wheel again. Mm. It's... So, but you learn to look thing in a different way.
Mm.
But, so that was a nice thing to do, and I did. I was in a silk printing office. We did posters for against nuclear bombs,
mm-hmm.
the cruise missiles,
mm.
and things like that. And so I made my own.
Do you have those posters?
Logos, characters. There is something left. Yeah. And for people who went on hunger strike because they didn't want to apply to military service and things like that.
But were you interested in the course, or it was more that you were interested in making all to design the posters?
In both.
Yeah.
It just went together.
So you were politically active in a way?
This was the combination of being politically active and also designing things that were needed, so banners and posters.
Are you still politically active?
No.
And why is that? Because it's, you don't find it necessary, or it's not?
Well, in fact, it's necessary, but it takes a lot of time being politically active. And in Holland, I knew pretty well. Which kind of people and which parties and which kind of committees and which kind of things fitted to my views. And then then Gerard Noordzee called me and said, if you like, I have a job for you. You can call this so-and-so and at Scan Graphic. They finally got a little bit money to have some extra personnel,
mm-hmm.
One, and I knew the person that was Volker Kuster. He was working there, and it was all they had a very ambitious plan to do a big type library to go with the systems they mm-hmm. sold. It was all proprietary for the typesetting, so. I had from one day to the other, I had my ideal job. I could do typefaces all day, and I was allowed to work as long as I liked. And I was a kind of sponge, soaking up everything that was there. And I didn't have time anymore to be politically active. And the German political climate is the way people agitate and talk about things and do things is a bit different from the Dutch people I knew. So I became my profession was so interesting for me that politics were not really interested.
There was no room left.
There was no room left. Yeah. It was still interesting. I still read newspapers and keep on. It also takes you some time before you get to know who's who in German politics, huh? Because when you're new and you never studied this before, then you get there's a party like this and a community like so and so, and politics they have other problems and other people that fight for this and that, and as long as it does not directly involve, as long as you're not directly involved, I always said when you don't mix up with politics, politics will mix up with you. And in Germany, politics didn't mix up with me.
Yes.
So I didn't mix up with politics.
After this interview, though.
This will you never know. Now they are after me again.
Was Scan Graphic was in what city?
Hamburg. It's Wedel near Hamburg. Mm. It's the next small town. It's like Wassenaar to Den Haag.
Okay.
It's.
And how many fonts did you design for Scan Graphic?
I did not design fonts.
Okay.
We scanned in fonts, mm-hmm. and we bought outlines at URW, and it was our job to make the fonts complete, because we had a fixed character set in which mm-hmm. all the fonts had to be the same. And we had to do we had two ways of spacing. We had text and headlines, so we had to do all spacing new, because most spacing was some kind of compromise between headlines and body text, or yeah. going through the family. And that's so you have a regular and a bold. They are for text. They have text spacing, and the black has display spacing, because it was supposed to be used in bigger mm-hmm. sizes. But we said we make text face. We make two versions of every typeface. Mm-hmm. So we did all spacing new. And then you also have to do kerning tables for both. So that was quite ambitious and a lot of work. And we did. I did type specimen books. My first book was like this, and 30 centimeters deep, because it was 6 volumes, and it cost 1 million mark to get them printed.
Do you have a copy of it?
No, yeah, I still have one complete set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how many did they print?
One 1,000 or something. Just it was a small, because they had a few hundred customers.
Yeah.
So what do you do with 1,000? Later on, they threw them away because they didn't sell systems and that much systems anymore.
Okay.
Because the Apple Macintosh came up, and then they had to hire rooms to store these type catalogs, and they thought, well, we never sell this, and so that's one
so
bad day.
Waste of money
it was after I left. Mm. So.
So what happened after Scan Graphic?
I left Scan Graphic because the management refused to invest in new computers and keeping the people at work. It was their idea they didn't have any idea at all,
mm.
because the company was bought by Mannesmann, so big multinational, big German industries. They thought, well, when Linotype is going to the stock exchange
mm-hmm.
and making money with these kind of laser typesetters, then we try to do the same. Then we buy Scan Graphic and do the same trick. But they didn't realize that Linotype became big because of the early PostScript agreement with Adobe.
Mm.
That's the thing that worked. They had 90% of the market.
Right.
And then Agfa came. Agfa took maybe the half, and Linotype was left over with the other half. Agfa took the American market.
Mm-hmm.
And then almost nothing was left over for all the others that came up. So that Scan Graphic desperately tried to do PostScript, but also they thought, well, the Macintosh is 300 dpi, that's what we use for post then.
Mm. Oh, really?
That's wow. we what they have to calculate is for this, but we do these things, and we will do it in color. But their color management system, their color system software failed, so they had hundreds and thousands invested in systems that didn't work. The same with Berthold. But they did the same thing. So these people had no idea what was going on in the market, and once they realized what was going on, it was too late. We had crash landing, and I jumped off the plane before it crashed. Yeah, people. URW was our font deliverer, and they knew that I was not that much satisfied anymore with how things went. But, so they called me and said, "We heard. When we hear you talking, we get you. So the impression that it's not anymore what it was. It's mm-hmm. great. So if you like, you can come talk with us."
So would you consider yourself? You're quite very lucky, no?
Then that was yeah. Other people also asked us. I was there with Jelle Bosma also from the Hague, and Type 90. We were both invited by Monotype. So if you would like to come to work for them, because Monotype did the agreement with Microsoft, which was then secret. Mm. Nobody knew about it. They cloned the PostScript font, so they made Arial to go with Helvetica to
yeah,
instead of to be used instead of Helvetica, and all things like that, which was a lot of work. And then I went for URW because I didn't want to leave Hamburg. But I was already so long in the city, and I didn't like the idea of going, moving again and starting all over. So then I was a few years at URW, and they also crash landed, and I didn't jump off in time, so I was thrown out at the back door when the front came down at the strip.
We see a pattern. You join a company, and the company crashes.
Yeah, and almost all companies in the typesetting business crashed by that time. There's only a few which really are still surviving.
Why do you think that is?
Because they didn't understand what was going on. They were not fast enough.
So could you say that the PostScript digital revolution was like too fierce? It was like too big to comprehend for those companies? Or they were just unlucky?
Yeah, I don't know. It was.
But did you see it though? I mean, were you, in that respect, did you think that that was what was going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we got this feeling when we got our first Macintosh, we saw how it worked. Then I thought, when I saw what the machine could do and how it worked and how easy people started to work with it, we realized this is going to be the thing, because this is so much easier and so much faster and so much more user friendly than our complicated systems. And of course, every graphic designers are people who want to be in control. So when you give them the choice between either doing controlling things or having somebody else do the job and be after them that they do their work, there's no question. They will work at night and the next night also, just to realize their things. Rather than being not sleeping, and and then the next morning you see what the others what the typesetting studio has done, and you already know in advance that they do not really do what you want. And then you have to correct. It's better to do it yourself. That's the attitude of most designers. I rather do it myself. I am a bad photographer, than having to deal with this stupid guy.
But that's a problem.
Who doesn't make the pictures that I like.
Yeah, but isn't that that's also the sort of the downfall in a way, that one becomes so autonomous that wants to be everything and doesn't work, for example, with a specialist. Would you say that?
Yes. Yeah, that's what everybody has to learn.
Yeah.
That it's not. There's only a very few people who can do various things in high quality, which is good enough to sell to customers over a long period of years.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get a big hit with unsharp photography, dumb typefaces, and the wrong paper. Because it's outrageous what you do, and just at the right moment, at the right place, in the right time. But to be able to continue this for larger customers and have a company running on such a basis, then you have to be somebody like David Carson. But when you look at his career, you also see that he's been thrown out here and starting up there again.
Yeah.
These people are famous, but when you look at their biography and how they get along financially, and it's also not the big easy job.
Right. It's also maybe a little bit his own fault. It's maybe also a little bit of Dave Carson's his own fault.
Yes, of course, everybody's responsible of his own shit.
And not showing up at the proper time is like, it doesn't really help.
it's
Copyright, Type Radio, all rights reserved.